You're listening to day two of Essential Hot Campus Pastoring Week.
Duh.
Oh, hey, you pulled out your French.
Yeah. I don't know where that came from.
Duh. Yeah, that's good.
I think it was like...
Oh, no. Did you do French in school?
I did for like 2 years, oh, but wow. I don't know anything.
All right, well...
Like, it was... That was like... 20 years ago or something.
You don't even remember how to say, I want to go to the bathroom?
No.
That's like standard. Like everyone needs to know that. That was like the very first thing I think I learned after bonjour and au revoir. Est-ce que je peux aller aux toilettes? It's, oh, yeah. No matter what. It's like, because I wanted to get out of French class as often as I could.
That's good.
All right. But I love
French. I would not have passed French were it for two lovely young ladies that helped me out.
Yes. It's always about the girls. Today is day two, right? It's day two of Essential Campus Pastoring Week. And if you didn't hear yesterday.
I have a great story because my dad will never listen to this podcast. He might. Yes, but somebody he knows will.
Okay.
I'm sure.
Let's do this.
So I had the same French teacher as my dad.
Are you serious?
I promise. And do you know what she told me?
What?
She said, you are just like your father. I said, really? What does that mean?
How old was your dad when he had you?
20, I don't know, 5.
Wow.
She was older.
As if she could remember that.
Well, she said, I said, really? And, you know, why would you say that? She said, did you know he was voted most flirtatious in his senior class? I said, I did not know that. Thank you so much for letting me know. So, yeah.
I love that.
Oh, it was great.
That is fantastic.
It is great. I'm going to have to find a way to bring that up on our other podcast as well.
Yes. Does he listen to the other podcast?
He has a couple of times, for
my
sure.
My dad listens to this podcast.
Really?
He was doing his basement, like putting drywall and all that, because he's retired now. And when I was talking to him, I heard my voice and your voice in the background.
That is crazy.
So he accounts for all our Canadian listeners other than Rob Clark, right?
Rob Clark.
All right. No, all that aside, today is day two of Essential Campus Pastoring Week. And if you didn't listen to yesterday, be sure to do that because we lay out the difference between campus pastoring, church planting, associate pastoring, senior pastoring, and all that. So really discerning what it means to be a campus pastor. Today, we're going to actually go a little bit more of a deep dive into what the overview of the campus pastor position is and going to look at barriers that you need to be aware of and other obstacles that you need to overcome. So that's something that we're going to be listening to in just a little bit. But if you purchase tonight, because every day we do a deal, if you purchase tonight before midnight using the coupon code that I'm going to give you after we are done listening,
sneaky.
You'll get 20% off the course. All right. So once again, 20% off the course. And like I said yesterday, at the end of the podcast, we announced for the very first time our Campus Pastor Coaching Summit.
Don't put this on 2.5 speed.
Okay. You know what? I always listen to my podcasts at 1.5 or 2. I can't wait to listen to this at double speed. That is going to be awesome. That is going to be awesome. All right. So listen in and let's hear Chris Kuba talk about the overview of the campus pastor position.
What are some of the best practices that kind of go beyond all of these different factors that can help you as a campus pastor, that could help me as a campus pastor know how to be most effective and for us as a church to put ourselves in the best position to help future campus pastors to succeed and allow campuses to thrive and allow campuses to flourish? There are many aspects of this campus pastor position that I've discovered now, having done this for about 6 years, that have been around forever. But the position of campus pastor is very new. And in order to understand what a campus pastor does, I do think it's important that we just take a look back and see how in the world did we get to this place. The multi-site movement has taken over the church. I think there's a lot of questions as to where this thing is going, and I think there's still a lot of questions left to be answered. But one thing you cannot deny is that it is here. Multi-site churches are kind of the trendy kind of thing that takes place now. A multi-site revolution has really happened. The multi-site model has ushered in this position that now I am and that you are and that maybe you aspire to be one day, that's called the campus pastor. Just before Jesus went up into heaven, he speaks the words that we often refer to as the Great Commission, which is the ultimate purpose and mandate for God's people and the drive and the function of God's church. I think it bears repeating and reading at this time. And it says in Matthew chapter 28, verse 18, "And Jesus came and said to them, 'All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always to the end of the age.'" The primary way that Jesus intended this great commission to be carried out was through his church, something that he says that the gates of hell will not prevail against. And throughout Christian history, churches have sought how to be faithful to this great commission while also adjusting to their culture, adjusting to their setting, and adjusting and adapting to the different cultural contexts which have been in direct conflict with this missionary effort that God has given to us. We've been trying to be creative in terms of how do we be the most effective in order to reach the most amount of people, and that will continue as we go along. But the scripture also gives us, yes, some structure of the church, but it doesn't necessarily tell us exactly how to do church, different ways to go about this. And I believe that this multi-site movement just came out of a desire to reach more and more people with the gospel, to be faithful to the Great Commission, but to also do so in a way that leverages technology, that leverages the ability to connect back to a regional campus that previously wasn't thought of or maybe wasn't even allowed to happen due to different constraints in terms of how we do ministry. But at the same time, there was a desire to be within biblical norms and biblical ideas. So what we've seen is that multi-site churches has moved from being trendy at one point to now becoming normal. It used to be innovative. Now it's really a preferred. For some churches, it started out as a necessary way for them to continue to grow and expand, perhaps beyond building restraints or building restrictions. And now for many churches, it has turned into a strategy where from the very get-go of this church, from the very start of them becoming a movement of God, they are starting off seeing multi-site as a primary way in which they're going to expand their reach and going to expand their influence. For example, in 2001, less than 200 churches were involved in multi-sites, and nearly all of them were found in North America. In 2014, over 8,000 churches were multi-site, which represents 9% of Protestant churchgoers and 3% of all Protestant churches. That number has only continued to rise over the last few years. And among the 100 largest churches, according to Outreach Magazine, only 12 have a single campus. So what we're seeing is that churches are adapting to this method. Of course, many of the larger churches are getting on board, but what we're also seeing as a part of this movement is that it's not just a large church thing to do multi-site. We're seeing that even smaller churches are getting involved in this idea of multi-site, and that's allowing them, instead of having to build bigger buildings or having to expand their footprint, they're able to instead expand their reach through technology or expand their reach through campuses, perhaps even faster or further and maybe even less expensive than previously thought. In fact, a lot of times when preachers get together, they have the conversations with each other. They kind of size each other up, or they say, "Hey, how many people you have coming to your church?" Or, "How many people do you guys have in Bible study?" You kind of give your stats, if you will, when it comes to your church. These days, it's almost just as common to talk to somebody, and they not only tell you how many people may be attending their church, how many people may be in Bible study, how many people may be involved in small groups or things like that. They'll also begin to tell you, this is how many campuses that we have. It's become almost like a badge of honor or something that people begin to put out there as a normal, natural thing that comes up in the life of churches. Churches choose multi-site for many different reasons. I want to give you just a few. For instance, one would be space and resources. Many churches were forced into this model because they just ran out of room. But others have chosen to go about this as, again, a strategy to be able to not have to maybe build more buildings or maybe to help deal with the incredible growth that they're experiencing at that very time. You know, a lot of times though, churches have a desire to maybe even reach more people, but resources are a factor. I mean, you just don't have the ability to do as much as the multi-site allows you to do because you have shared resources. You've got the ability to connect with children's ministry or student ministry, or maybe even have those people serve in a overall capacity or use what they've done before, use their materials or whatever it may be. Multi-site is an incredible strategy to leverage both space and get more out of your space or to be able to go in different places, but also it allows you to share those resources. Another thing I'd tell you, a reason why churches delve into multi-site is because of expanded reach. There's a desire to reach people, but there's just a geographical barrier that keeps that from happening. That's just realistic. Maybe people are coming to the church or experiencing the ministry of the church, but they're just not inviting their friends. They're not inviting their neighbors. They're not reaching out to people because it's just not realistic to go that far. What this allows you to do is to be able to, instead of them coming to you, you're able to go to them. And you're able to put a campus there that's going to have life right from the get-go. It's going to have resources right from the get-go. It's going to allow evangelism to take place more aggressively and evangelism to take place strategically through the impact of those who are already coming from a distance. It's going to allow pastoral care to more realistically take place because there's a location that's close by. It's also going to allow new volunteers to emerge, or maybe somebody was in an apprentice-type role at the original location. Maybe they live a little closer to this new campus. Well, now they're going to be able to maybe take some point leadership from a volunteer standpoint, and you're going to see new teachers, new leaders emerge because of new opportunities to be able to expand the ministry and the influence through the ministry of multi-site. In addition, that not only goes with volunteers, but another number three, a thing I'd mentioned to you as to why churches are doing multi-site is to leverage staff. This was really my story. I was at a point where I felt like I'd kind of hit a ceiling where I was at. There really wasn't any more that I felt like God was going to lead me to do in that specific place that I was. However, because a new site opened up, there was an opportunity to do that. I've seen that happen over and over again, even through our ministry at Prestonwood, where you've had guys that have maybe come up as an intern or come up in a different position. And they're doing a really, really good job, but there's not really an opportunity for them to advance or for their influence to even expand. Well, because of multi-site, there now is opportunities to go to different campuses, and you really allow your staff team to expand with even the same DNA being transferred, which is a huge, huge benefit. Later on, Daniel's going to be spending some time talking to you about what is a campus pastor, which is such an important thing because you really got to test and see your heart. There's some key things for you to know as to whether this is something that God is actually calling you to do. What I want to spend some time with you, though, is to talk about first of all, the unique challenges that come along with being a campus pastor. There's no question about it, this being such a new role and trying to kind of figure out, there's some certain things that I've certainly come up with and have noticed as well through some of my research that are just big roadblocks when it comes to the issue of being a campus pastor. The first one I'd mention to you is this: it's being in charge without being in charge. Campus pastors are responsible for a staff team. They're responsible for a volunteer army. They have responsibility and they have oversight of a campus. While at the same time, they're not in charge and they're not ultimately the pastor. There are different levels of freedom and autonomy between different campuses. Perhaps you may experience more than maybe somebody else, but there's always going to be something that's going to happen. There's going to be some decision that's going to be made. There's going to be some initiative or some direction that is going to be established that is going to quickly remind you that you are not ultimately in charge. You just got to be aware of that. You just got to know that that is the case. You have to lead like you were in charge, but you have to defer and set up the senior pastor to ultimately be the leader.
You know, from the get-go, I would just like to say, I love Chris Kuba, and yes. I love saying his name.
Kuba. Yeah, because his name reminds me of the Koopa Troopa.
Yes. Which
Chris Kuba, Koopa Troopa.
One of my favorite characters on Mario Kart.
Really? Are you a Koopa Troopa guy?
Yeah.
Is that who you choose? I always choose Donkey Kong.
One of my four-year-old chooses Donkey Kong.
Okay. And why does he choose Donkey Kong?
I don't know.
Actually, I remember at your house talking to your son about this, and then we talked about Bowser as well, and how Donkey Kong was superior to Bowser.
Yes.
This is before our trip to Chattanooga.
He may have mentioned Diddy Kong. He likes Diddy Kong, too.
Oh, yes, that's right. That was a little bit back and forth. That was not original Super Nintendo Mario Kart.
Okay.
That was like
later.
That's like N64. I don't know what even they have now, but
I am currently trying to locate an adapter. I probably just need to go to Radio Shack. But an adapter I have an Atari 25 or 2600. I can't remember, but I just found it. And it was my wife's. We played it when we first got married. We used to play it every once in a while. And it still worked then. And I'm hoping it still worked now.
That is awesome.
You know, TVs have changed so much. It's like, how on earth do you find an adapter for the original?
Amazon, man. Amazon does everything. It will. And with Prime, you can get... Anyways, we're not promoting Prime right now. But
or Radio Shack.
Or Radio Shack.
Thank you for our sponsor, Radio Shack. Is Radio Shack even a thing anymore? Do they still exist?
Didn't Circuit City buy them out? Or,
maybe.
I don't know. All but right. If you do want to sponsor our podcast, Radio Shack
this
or
is
Circuit
to you,
City.
Radio Shack. Or RC Cola.
RC Cola,
we're
yes.
there, too. Kick we're back. Located in Nashville.
Yes.
So, RC Cola and a moon pie.
So this was day two of Campus Pastoring Week. We are going to come back tomorrow and listen into the next module, which is all about the internal life of the campus pastor. And you know who does this?
Who?
Michael Kelsey.
And
you know, he talks about internal life of the campus pastor, but this is honestly, when I listened to it, and I sat in the studio while he was sharing this, it was like a preach-off. Like, he was preaching, and it was like, it applies to every pastor, every church.
So he was actually one of my campus pastors way back in the day, and he's my favorite. I actually stole him from Luis Palau.
Yes, you did.
My wife worked there, and I was like, hey, I like you.
Yeah, so be sure to tune in if you purchase Essential Campus Pastoring before midnight tonight Central, use the coupon code CAMPUS20, all right, the number 20, CAMPUS20, and you could get 20% off the course. Otherwise, go to our website today, and you can go to our podcast number or our show notes and get a link to the Coaching Summit page to learn a little bit more about that. Or you can go to newchurches.com/product/campus pastor summit, and you can purchase a ticket to our summit as well. And with that, you also get the course. But we will see you tomorrow.